Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, September 29th, 2023. A House Republican bill to prevent a government shutdown is voted down in the House when 21 House Republicans vote no. They want to pass instead all the regular government spending bills and negotiate with the Senate and White House on that. And a leader of the group, Matt Gaetz, speaking out against the border security language added to today's bill, saying it wasn't tough enough on illegal immigration. But time is short. The deadline to keep the government operating is midnight Sunday, October 1st, the new fiscal year. Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California, has died at the age of 90. She was the longest-serving female senator in U.S. history. Tributes today coming from both Democrats and Republicans. Vice President Kamala Harris, who served with Senator Feinstein in the Senate, calling her one of the greatest public servants that California and our nation has ever known. And Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, posting Senator Dianne Feinstein was a trailblazing senator, a strong and effective leader, and a good friend. And the outgoing chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, saying at his retirement ceremony that the U.S. military owes its loyalty to the Constitution, not a wannabe dictator. An apparent reference to former President Donald Trump, with whom he's had public disagreements, even to the point that Donald Trump has suggested that some of General Milley's actions would in earlier times be punishable by death. From NBC News, a band of conservative rebels on Friday revolted and blocked House Republican short-term funding bill to keep the government open, delivering a political blow to Speaker Kevin McCarthy and likely cementing the chances of a painful government shutdown that is less than 48 hours away. 21 rebels, led by Matt Gaetz, Republican of Florida, a conservative bomb thrower and a top Donald Trump ally, voted Friday afternoon to scuttle the 30-day funding bill, leaving Republicans without a game plan to avert a shutdown. The vote failed 198 to 232. The hardliners say they are unconcerned if the government shuts down, as it appears likely to do at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Sunday. They want the House to pass all 12 appropriations bills with steep spending cuts, then negotiate funding with the Democratic-controlled Senate. And this is from NBC News. It continues, moderate Republicans lashed out with fury at the conservatives who voted down the funding bill, with specific criticism reserved for Congressman Gaetz, whom they accused of fomenting chaos to oust Speaker McCarthy. Well, Speaker McCarthy started the day with a news conference promoting this version of a short-term government funding measure, a CR as it's known, continuing resolution. It contained a 30% spending cut for everything except defense, national security, veterans programs, and disaster aid. Also contained border security provisions. Speaker also noted the House had been working on full fiscal year spending bills this week.
We've done what many have said was impossible. When I became Speaker, I said we're going to change Washington. And we did that by keeping our commitment to restoring regular order. Bills that passed committee in June and July have been open for amendments for months. Struggled with a number of members who wouldn't allow it to come up, but I never gave up. 440 amendments were considered on the floor this week. And for those who are historians, we are the first Republican majority to pass the State and Foreign Ops Bill through regular order since 2006. My entire political career as a member of Congress, the Republicans have never been able to do what they just did last night. As we continue to get conservative wins and return to regular order, we actually need a stopgap measure to allow the House to continue to finish its work, to make sure our military gets paid, to make sure our border agents get paid as we finish the job that we're supposed to do. Another reason for the stopgap is to address President Biden's historic failure on the southern border. This is how bad things have gotten under President Biden's watch. In 5 days, there's been more than 50,000 illegal border crossings. Put that in perspective, in just 5 days. That's more than twice as much as the average for the entire month in the last administration. A wide open policy hurts America.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, at a news conference this morning promoting the short-term government funding measure that later came up on the House floor and failed in a vote with 21 Republicans voting no. One of those no votes, Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, spoke during the debate.
The House of Representatives has passed funding bills to fund our veterans, our troops, our Border Patrol, our state and foreign ops. These are the core functions of government. The Senate should take up and pass those bills to make sure those folks are paid, and they should do it today. But the rule we are on now advances a continuing resolution that weakens the Republican position on strong border policies. Just last night, we passed a Department of Homeland Security appropriations bill that was lashed to policy requirements at the Department of Homeland Security. They had to do certain things to fix the border to get the money. And one of those things was E-Verify. Last night, we stood together and we demanded that E-Verify be included if Mayorkas wanted the money. And this continuing resolution that the rule we're on now would facilitate strips E-Verify and takes it out. Why would Republicans just overnight back away from such a strong and necessary provision as E-Verify? I will be voting against this continuing resolution because I want House Republicans to have the strongest position on the border. The American people will come with us on that. We've just got to have the courage to lead and not surrender. I know the big businesses don't want E-Verify, but we should want it anyway for the American worker.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, Republican from Florida, on the House floor during debate on the one-month government spending bill, the CR, continuing resolution that was put forth by Speaker Kevin McCarthy. It failed. Again, the vote was 198 to 232. Matt Gaetz and 20 other Republicans voting no. Another no, Tim Burchett of Indiana, who spoke later in the day about government spending.
Fitch, which is a rating agency, recently downgraded the United States credit rating because of the general government deficit, which it anticipates will be 6.3% of gross domestic product in 2023, when it was only 3.7% in 2022. That's a huge jump for 1 year, and folks, that is doubled, almost doubled. Another reason they gave was leadership, and that's been over the last 20 years, so that cuts both ways. That's both parties. The United States spends approximately $300 billion each month. That's nearly $7 million each minute. It only takes our government 2 hours and 22 minutes to spend $1 billion, if you can imagine that. We are on the verge of a government shutdown, which none of my colleagues want. Contrary to popular belief, we're not sitting, some of us conservative folks aren't sitting in a room hoping for this, because we don't want our constituents to suffer any undue pain because of our lack of work. However, this out-of-control spending, it needs to change. And many of my Republican colleagues and we're going to fight for that change to happen today, not in 30 days or 3 months or right before Christmas, because that's pretty much been the plan. We pass a continuing resolution for 30 days, and then they say, well, we need another one for 30 days. And then guess what? We're backed up to the Christmas holiday, and then they say, well, we need to pass an omnibus. And basically, an omnibus is just a continuation, a large continued resolution. And in my opinion, it's chock full of goodies for powerful members of this body. It's also chock full of goodies for lobbyists and their special interests that we continue to grease.
Congressman Tim Burchett, Republican from Indiana, on the House floor a few hours after the House voted down a government funding bill, a 30-day short-term bill to keep the government open. It also had spending cuts, and it did have border security provisions. 21 total Republicans voting no. Democrats also voting no on this, and that's why it failed. The House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries, held his own news conference to talk about what's next.
Once again, extreme MAGA Republicans in the House have demonstrated their complete and utter inability to govern. We are in the middle of a Republican civil war that has been ongoing for months and now threatens a catastrophic government shutdown that will hurt everyday Americans, hurt children, hurt military men and women, hurt veterans, hurt seniors, hurt women, hurt families, hurt the economy. And there is absolutely no reason that we should be facing a government shutdown at this moment. There is a bipartisan continuing resolution making its way through the Senate that would ensure the government doesn't shut down, that funding is available to meet the needs of the American people, that is free of any partisan, poison pill, ideological amendments, and that provides support for everyday Americans who've been hit hard by extreme weather events, and for the Ukrainian war effort that is important to freedom and democracy and truth across the world. The Senate bipartisan continuing resolution will emerge in that institution in the next few days and be sent over to the House of Representatives. The only way forward is for House Republicans to put the bipartisan continuing resolution that emerges from the Senate on the House floor for an up or down vote. And if House Republicans were to do that, we can avoid a catastrophic, extreme MAGA Republican government shutdown.
The House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, at a news conference after the House voted down today's version put forth by Speaker Kevin McCarthy of a short-term government funding bill. That Senate bill that he referred to is likely to pass Saturday. Negotiations are underway about whether any amendments could be offered. That funds the government for 45 days, includes money for Ukraine and for U.S. disaster relief. 77 out of 100 senators have already voted yes in procedural votes so far to advance the bill. The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, also from New York, Democrat, spoke on the Senate floor about what happened in the House and what he wants to happen in the Senate.
In less than 48 hours, funding that pays the salaries of our troops for border enforcement, for TSA operations, nutrition programs, food inspections, all will come to a halt. As I've said for months, Congress has only one option to avoid a shutdown: bipartisanship. We needed bipartisanship yesterday. We need it today. We will need it tomorrow. It's true. Today, yet yesterday, today, and tomorrow. But in the House, sadly, unlike the Senate, we have not seen bipartisanship. We have only seen chaos. We have only seen paralysis. A few hours ago, Speaker McCarthy held a vote on a truly radical CR proposal everyone knew never stood a chance of passing the Senate. And now, the House Republican CR has failed to even pass the House by an unexpectedly large and decisive margin, 34 votes, much more than most expected. The Speaker has spent weeks catering to the hard right, and now he finds himself in the exact same position he's been in since the beginning. No plan forward, no closer to passing something that avoids a shutdown. The Speaker needs to abandon his doomed mission of trying to please MAGA extremists, and instead, he needs to work across the aisle to keep the government open. Things seem to be getting worse for the Speaker rather than better, and it's time for him to try bipartisanship. Here in the Senate, bipartisanship is precisely what we are pursuing.
The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, on the Senate floor. Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, is one of the senators on the Republican side who voted yes so far on that bipartisan CR in the Senate. There were 19 Senate Republicans who have been voting no. But Senator Cornyn, following Senator Schumer today, said on the floor that what's happening now to fund the government is not the ideal way.
The truth is the Senate has not passed a Senate single appropriations bill that passed out of the Senate Appropriations Committee by bipartisan support. Some of them were passed unanimously. The first bill, I believe, that passed out of the Senate Appropriations Committee passed out some 80 days ago. Now, it may have taken until the end of July before we could get a House bill to then amend, which is a necessary procedural prerequisite. But the fact of the matter is, the majority leader, who's the only person who can schedule a vote on any of these pieces of legislation, has failed to bring any of these bills to the floor and successfully pass the United States Senate. So 18 days before the end of the fiscal year, which is the shutdown unless we pass another funding bill, the majority leader puts a so-called minibus or a combination of three appropriation bills on the floor. That was the first time the majority leader decided to actually schedule a vote on anything. My point is that the majority leader likes to blame the House, and particularly because it's a majority Republicans. So he acts like this is all their fault. Everything's just hunky-dory and bipartisan in the Senate. That's false. The majority leader has contributed dramatically to this shutdown because of the Senate's failure under his leadership to pass any appropriation bills whatsoever. And yes, it's no surprise to anybody that here we are needing to find some way forward on a continuing resolution, in other words, to keep the lights on while we continue to work out other differences. I think shutdowns are a mistake. Shutdowns are a mistake because they don't solve the underlying problem. They disrupt all sorts of people, and he mentioned some of the people they disrupt, including paid or military. Our own staff aren't going to get paid. People aren't going to get able to get passports through the passport office, or they got immigration problems, or if a veteran's worried about getting compensation or other benefits, they're not going to be responded to because of this government shutdown. Completely, completely predictable and completely, completely unnecessary.
Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, on the Senate floor. The White House has endorsed the bipartisan short-term government funding bill making its way through the Senate and issued a veto threat against the bill that Speaker Kevin McCarthy brought up in the House today, the one that was voted down when 21 Republicans voted no. The White House Office of Management and Budget Director Shalanda Young was in the White House briefing room today taking questions about the effects of a possible government shutdown.
We've seen this show before where it goes down to the wire and then at the last minute something happens or several days pass before anything happens. Can you just talk about fundamentally the impact, even if this were to be resolved, of playing this game where it goes to the last minute before there's a short-term spending bill, how that sort of impacts the way our country runs? Because a lot of Americans see that and they know that that's not the way it can work in their own homes.
You're right, and you're right. I mean, we have time. Would the president say there's nothing inevitable in politics? We don't have to go down this road. House Republicans don't have to take us down this road. So you're right. There is always a chance that people can do the right thing and the government remain open or have a quick reopening.
But even getting to this place, there's already been a ton of money lost, right?
Not a ton of money lost. The confidence in government is what I worry about. People watching this, the dysfunction sowed, and I think there are a small amount of people who know that. You know, it's the carelessness by which people's like, oh, this shutdown is not much of government. Well, you tell people who live paycheck to paycheck that. I know it's not popular to defend federal workers. I know it's not. But a lot of them live paycheck to paycheck. They get repaid. What are they supposed to do in the meantime? What are they supposed to do? And then people can't get government services. You go sign up for WIC. You finally convince his mother it's the right thing to do because a lot of families are embarrassed about taking aid from the government. You finally convince this young mother to go do that. Not available. Confidence lost in government. It's one more knock on democratic institutions. And that worries me.
Shalanda Young is the White House Budget Director, the Director of OMB, Office of Management and Budget, with reporters in the White House briefing room. Wall Street today, the Dow down 158, NASDAQ up 18, S&P down 11. From Associated Press, the United Auto Workers expanded its two-week strikes against Detroit automakers Friday, adding 7,000 workers at a Ford plant in Chicago and a General Motors assembly factory near Lansing, Michigan. Union President Sean Fain told workers on a video appearance Friday that negotiations have not broken down, but the strikes were escalated because Ford and GM have refused to make meaningful progress in contract talks. Jeep maker Stellantis was spared from the third round of strikes. That from AP. Here is UAW President Sean Fain, part of his online address.
UAW family, I'm going to be very direct with you. Over the last week, the vice presidents and your national negotiators in my office have been working night and day to bargain a record contract that reflects the record profits we have produced for the Big Three. Sadly, despite our willingness to bargain, Ford and GM have refused to make meaningful progress at the table. That's why at noon Eastern time today, we will expand our strike to these two companies. To be clear, negotiations haven't broke down. We're still talking with all three companies. And I'm still very hopeful that we can reach a deal that reflects the incredible sacrifices and contributions our members have made over the last decade.
UAW President Sean Fain in an online address this morning. Ford CEO Jim Farley also spoke by live video reacting to the expansion of the UAW strike.
The union asked for historic gains for our workers. No problem. We didn't even wait for the contract for that. Record contract, no problem. Mortgaging our future, that's a big problem. We will never do it. The billions in costs the UAW leadership is demanding, beyond the billions we have already offered them, would have had devastating impacts for our business and therefore our workforce. The industry expands. Look at the experts and what they've said about this, like President Obama's car czar, Steve Rattner. They can see all this as plain as day. We have plenty, pretty much lost domestic production in our country for small cars. It's gone forever. A bad deal would threaten now midsize and much more expensive larger vehicles like Escape and Explorer. We'd have to choose to cut future investments in those products, restructure, and reduce our headcount throughout the company, including UAW workers. What's really frustrating is that I believe we could have reached a compromise on pay and benefits, but so far the UAW is holding the deal hostage over battery plants. Keep in mind, these battery plants don't exist yet.
Jim Farley is CEO of Ford, speaking in a video address today. CNN reports that the United Auto Workers Union's decision to go on strike against one assembly plant each at General Motors and Ford steps up the pressure on the companies, but it's not the ultimate step that it could have taken against either company. So far, it is not affecting the supply of the best-selling vehicles of both companies, the Chevrolet Silverado and Ford's F-Series pickup trucks, the best-selling vehicle in the nation by any company. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast wherever you find your podcast and on the C-SPAN Now mobile app. From CBS News, there's this Senator Dianne Feinstein, who shattered glass ceilings during her more than three decades in the U.S. Senate, has died at the age of 90. Senator Feinstein cast her last vote in the Senate late Thursday morning, according to Senate records. According to a statement by her chief of staff, she died in her Washington, D.C. home Thursday night. That chief of staff saying Senator Feinstein never backed away from a fight for what was just and right. At the same time, she was always willing to work with anyone, even those who she disagreed with, if it meant bettering the lives of Californians or the betterment of our nation. Flags lowered today to half-staff over the Capitol building and the White House. The Senate held a moment of silence in Senator Feinstein's honor. Her desk draped in black cloth, a vase of white roses on top. A number of senators coming to the floor to speak about her legacy as her daughter, Catherine, watched from the gallery. Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington State, among those speakers, was elected in 1992, same year as Senator Feinstein.
Yesterday, the senior senator from California came onto the floor through those doors to do her job. She voted. She voted to make sure that our country would continue to move forward and not shut down. That was Diane. She did her job every day. She cared about her country. She cared about her state. She cared about doing a job, no matter how tough it is, for the future of America. And she did it with dignity and respect every single minute. Today, you will hear accolades from across the country, lists of legislative accomplishments from her early days all the way through her career. What I just want to say today, it is a true loss to America. It is a loss to her family. My heart is with you. It is a loss to her colleagues from California who have served with her and know her as I do, as a tower of strength, to our colleagues on the floor who have worked with her on a laundry list of legislation that you will hear about, and it's way too long to list today. But to her constituents, you need to know we depended on her just as you did. And she was here every day to fight for you, no matter what. She fought for women. She fought for those who were victims of gun violence. She fought for foreign policy that was remote to most people, but she knew every detail. And when Diane spoke, the rest of us stopped and we listened. Mr. President, she was a friend. I was sworn into office just a few weeks after she was, and she was always there for us in matters big and small, in matters of our country, in matters of policy, and always as a friend. To those of you who don't know, she was the most generous senator I have ever known. I remember one time when I noticed that her purse was really nice, and I said, Diane, that purse, it's beautiful. 2 days later, I got one delivered to my door. That was Diane.
Senator Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington State, on the Senate floor. Also paying tribute to the late Senator Dianne Feinstein, Senator Susan Collins, Republican from Maine, who served alongside Senator Feinstein since 1996.
Diane was such a strong presence in the Senate. She was a determined and tenacious advocate. Many of us worked closely with her on the Intelligence Committee, where she was such an excellent chairman. She was always fair, respectful, informed, and strong. We worked together on the Appropriations Committee as well, where she chaired the Energy and Water Subcommittee. Many of us were her allies on the Violence Against Women Act and the Respect for Marriage Act. The Senate and the country has lost a model senator. Elegant, graceful, kind, compassionate, strong, informed, intelligent. Mr. President, I have also lost a dear friend. I put up this watercolor painting that Diane did and gave me so many years ago. It has hung in my office ever since, and it will have a place of honor there always. Every time I would pass by, I would look at it and think about how talented Diane was in so many different areas. I treasure this painting. When I became engaged 11 years ago, it was Diane who sponsored a reception for me and my now husband, Tom Davran, in her home in Washington. My story is very similar to that of the Republican leader. I was also reminded when I heard Senator Murray talk about Diane's generosity. At one point, 1 year, she bought seersucker suits for every woman who was serving in the Senate so that we could all participate in Seersucker Tuesday. That was Diane.
Senator Susan Collins, Republican from Maine, today on the Senate floor. President Joe Biden put out a statement calling the late Senator Dianne Feinstein a pioneering American and a true trailblazer. And he wrote, Diane made her mark on everything from national security to the environment to protecting civil liberties. She's made history in so many ways, and our country will benefit from her legacy for generations. President Biden making some brief remarks at the start of an unrelated event.
Before I begin, I want to say a brief word about Senator Dianne Feinstein, who passed away this morning. She was a historic figure, trailblazer for women, and a great friend. Dianne made her mark on everything from national security to the environment, to gun safety, to protecting civil liberties. The country's going to miss her dearly, and so will Jill and I. I'll have more to say about her later today.
President Biden at the beginning of the retirement ceremony for the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. C-SPAN spoke to Roll Call Editor-in-Chief Jason Dick about Senator Feinstein's legacy.
The legacy is one that's deep, and certainly people in California, you know, are aware of it. I mean, this is the first, you know, woman who was the mayor of San Francisco. You know, she was elected in a special election 30 years. You know, she chaired the Intelligence Committee during a very difficult time in relationships between the intelligence community and Congress, was, you know, one of the chief architects of what became known as the torture report, but which gave, you know, the public an idea of exactly what the Intelligence Committee was doing in the name of the American people during the war on terror. You know, she was the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. I mean, just a huge, huge legacy for her, you know, and one that will be, I think, linked with certainly with the former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, another big San Francisco Democrat, and another trailblazer there in the first woman speaker.
It's kind of interesting to see some of the Republican reaction. Obviously, you see the sympathy, the tweets and condolences and things like that. But several members, including Senator Marsha Blackburn, Tennessee, saying, we worked across the aisle. She and I worked together on music rights for songwriters and on big tech issue. There were a number of Republican senators saying that they appreciated her working across the aisle.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, something that gets lost, I think, in classifying people as San Francisco Democrats or liberals or California Democrats, is that there is not there's not a template from which it comes. I mean, San Francisco was a Democratic power base and continues to be for years, but there was a very pragmatic approach to politics with Dianne Feinstein. She obviously held very strong views on things like gun control, on abortion rights and so forth, but that didn't mean that she didn't want to work with her colleagues. It reminds me a little of the speech that the president gave yesterday in Arizona, my home state, about John McCain. John McCain and Joe Biden lived and worked together for years, lived in the same city, I should note, and worked together in the Senate for years. And even though they came from very different approaches to politics, they were always able to work together. Same thing with Dianne Feinstein. She has she had very strong opinions, very strong policy positions on very polarizing topics, but found a way to work with colleagues across the aisle.
Well, we've got the U.S. House. The Senate is coming in, so we'll certainly hear some tributes to Senator Feinstein. The House coming in at 10 o'clock Eastern. But just one more question for her. Now the look ahead. A number of candidates have already mentioned they want to run for Senate when the seat is up in 2024. But now Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, has a decision to make.
He does, absolutely. And, you know, coincidentally, we're supposed to sponsor a roll call, a Senate debate forum next Sunday with Adam Schiff and Katie Lee and Katie Porter and Barbara Lee, three House Democrats who are all running for the seat. In that situation, you know, Gavin Newsom says he does not want to. He said he didn't want to replace her, at all. He didn't want to appoint a successor at all because he wished her best health. But now he has said that he will appoint. He's promised to appoint a black woman. Barbara Lee would be the first black woman, on the list for a lot of people, and she's from Oakland. But Newsom has also said he doesn't want to put his thumb on the scale and appoint someone who's already running so that they would be an incumbent going into this. So at this point, the list gets a little hazy. I mean, Oprah Winfrey has been mentioned as a possible, sort of caretaker of a short-term appointment because it would only last until the 2024 election and when the successor is sworn in. So it gets a little interesting here because Newsom, has sort of boxed himself in with some of his his pledges to appoint a black woman, and also not somebody who's currently running. So we're reporting away as we speak.
Great.
on what happens next. Obviously, the Senate, you know, with the margins and with the shutdown looming and so forth, they want to be at full strength. They want 100 senators. So I would think that Newsom would have to make this decision pretty quickly.
Well, our viewers and listeners keep track of all that at rollcall.com. Jason Dick, editor-in-chief of CQ Roll Call, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Interview from this morning's Washington Journal when the news broke about the death of Senator Feinstein. Governor Gavin Newsom, Democrat of California, putting out a statement, making no mention yet about a replacement. His statement reads in part, Dianne Feinstein was many things, a powerful, trailblazing U.S. senator, an early voice for gun control, a leader in times of tragedy and chaos. But to me, she was a friend, a lifelong mentor, and a role model, not only for me, but to my wife and daughters, for what a powerful, effective leader looks like. If you search at cspan.org, our video library, for Dianne Feinstein, you come up with over 1,500 hits. She was interviewed by C-SPAN in April 1993, shortly after she took office, and asked how her new job compared to one of her old jobs.
How does the job of mayor compare to senator?
Well, the job of mayor has an advantage. One advantage is you can say, just do it and get it done, and then history will prove you right or wrong. In the Senate, you can't just say, just do it. It's convincing and it's cajoling. And as a freshman, it's having not very much influence. The Senate is really a body that's been established for a long time that's built on congeniality, slowing down, full discussion. And to somebody that's action-oriented, it can be also very frustrating.
Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California, on C-SPAN in the spring of 1993, right after her first election to the Senate. She has died at the age of 90. From USA Today, outgoing Joint Chiefs of Staff General Mark Milley said Friday that the U.S. military owes its loyalty to the Constitution, not to a wannabe dictator, in apparent reference to former President Donald Trump, with whom he has clashed. While General Milley did not specifically mention Donald Trump, his unusually strong comments came a week after Donald Trump called General Milley a traitor who might deserve a death penalty for his communications with China near the end of the Trump administration. We'll hear from General Milley in a moment, but first, here's President Joe Biden at today's retirement ceremony, who also talked about the loyalty to the Constitution.
When it comes to the Constitution, that is and always has been Mark's North Star. I'm so damn proud to serve with him. He's made it the central image on his challenge coin. Those three little words that mean so much to every American, but especially to those who stand in the service of our nation. The middle of his challenge coin says, "We the people. We the people." It's a reminder to all of us what makes us a strong nation, who we are as a democracy, and how the United States, for more than two centuries, has always managed to keep moving forward. Not fealty to any one person or to a political party, but to the idea of America.
President Biden today at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall in Arlington, Virginia, the retirement ceremony for General Mark Milley, who is completing 4 years as Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the welcoming of the just confirmed Joint Chief of Staff chair will be taking over, General Charles C.Q. Brown. General Milley's remarks, also talking about the oath, not to any person, but to the ideals of the U.S. Constitution.
But today is not about anyone up here on this stage. It's not about the President, the Secretary of Defense, me, C.Q. It's not about us. It's about something much larger than all of us. It's about our democracy. It's about our republic. It's about the colors posted behind me. It's about the ideas and the values that make up this great experiment in liberty. Those values and ideas are contained within the Constitution of the United States of America, which is the moral North Star for all of us who have the privilege of wearing the cloth of our nation
It is that document, the idea that is America, it is that document that gives purpose to our service. It is that document that gives purpose to our lives. It is that document that all of us in uniform swear to protect and defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That has been true across generations, and we in uniform are willing to die to pass that document off to the next generation. So it is that document that gives ultimate purpose to our death. The motto of our country is E Pluribus Unum. From the many come one. We are one nation under God. We are indivisible with liberty for all. And the motto of our Army for over 200 years, since 14 June 1775, when a company of Pennsylvania riflemen formed it. The motto has been, "This we'll defend," and that "this" refers to the Constitution of the United States, that we, the people, in order to form a more perfect union, to protect the liberty of this country. You see, we in uniform are unique. We are unique among the world's armies. We are unique among the world's militaries. We don't take an oath to a country. We don't take an oath to a tribe. We don't take an oath to a religion. We don't take an oath to a king or a queen or to a tyrant or a dictator. And we don't take an oath to a wannabe dictator. We don't take an oath to an individual. We take an oath to the Constitution, and we take an oath to the idea that is America, and we're willing to die to protect it. Every soldier, sailor, airman, Marine, Guardian, and Coast Guardsman, each of us commits our very life to protect and defend that document, regardless of personal price, and we are not easily intimidated.
General Mark Milley, outgoing chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, at today's ceremony on his retirement, ending a four-year term as the nation's highest-ranking military officer and also the principal military advisor to the President, Secretary of Defense, and National Security Council. Finally, a view on the race for president in 2024 on C-SPAN Radio. Governor Spencer Cox, Republican of Utah, about the two frontrunners, according to the polls.
This is really important to all of us. Right now, some recent polling that showed that 70% of Republicans don't want Donald Trump to actually run. And 75% of Democrats don't want Joe Biden to run. We have a super majority of our nation doesn't want either of them to run. And yet, they're both probably going to be the nominees. So that talks about our system and how messed up it is. Another story for another time. But I think the point here that is really important is that the fact that they are means that this work is more important than ever before. That we desperately need more of this. Again, that Overton window, the fact that we're numb to some of the things that are said, some of the actions that are taken, just reiterates. And we can't expect politicians to save this. It is every single one of us engaged in this work. In a very real way, what you post on Facebook is doing as much damage to our country and to our world, to global security, by the way. I mean, Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, they love this stuff. They love the way we're tearing each other apart. And the world needs a strong and unified America more than ever before. And so I would just encourage all of us to think twice. Anytime you're saying those Republicans or those Democrats, those people, then you're doing it wrong and you're hurting our country. There is nothing more un-American than hating our fellow Americans. And it's up to all of us to change D.C., not the other way around. So please, please, please think twice and reach out to people who are different than you.
Governor Spencer Cox, Republican from Utah, at the Atlantic Festival, hosted by the Atlantic Magazine, held today at Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. You can find the full video at our website, cspan.org. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter, word for word. It's free. And get the stories making headlines sent to your inbox every day. Subscribe at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night. and weekend.